Welcome to another episode of the RAG podcast. And for those of you who don't know, the RAG stands for Recruitment Agency Growth. Since early 2019, I've been interviewing the most successful and innovative recruitment owners to learn how they rose to the top of their game. In season 7, I'm going to be having raw, authentic, and insightful conversations with agency owners, entrepreneurs, leaders, people across the industry. And I want to be learning about their ambitions, what's happening behind the scenes in their agencies today, and their plans to navigate difficult market conditions. I'll be bringing you the latest and greatest recruitment stories every single week on Wednesdays at noon across multiple platforms. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the RAG podcast. On this week's show, I'm super excited to be joined by Mertez Lobato. She is the CEO and founder of AGM Tech Solutions, a recruitment firm headquartered in New Jersey in the US with 25 recruiters and 150 contractors across the nation. She started her business just under 6 years ago, however, only entered the US a few years earlier from Brazil and could not speak a word of English. She worked as a cleaner and a babysitter in the first few years, then got a job in tech sales, moved into recruitment, and then launched her business in 2018. And in the last 5 years, they've done $100 million in revenue in sales, which is just phenomenal. She's done that with 3 children, as an immigrant, without English being her first language, and the energy this woman has is incredible. In this show, we go through her story, her life in Brazil, coming to the US, and everything in between. If you're looking for an inspirational story to get you off the ground and start or drive your recruitment business even further, this is the one for you. So without further ado, Mertez, welcome to the RAG podcast.
Thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
No, thank you. Thank you. What time is it where you are right now? For me, it's almost 3 p.m. in the afternoon. What are we saying for you?
Oh my goodness, it's time for your afternoon coffee. Yeah. It's 9:44 a.m. here.
Thank you. I've interrupted your morning, right? So I must be important. Yes. Mornings are sacred in my house, right? You don't do that.
You're good.
Well, we've been looking at this for months, right? Well, I think it was late last year we talked about this, and for whatever reason, obviously I've had a baby and my life's gone a bit bonkers and you've been busy. Took us a few months to get here, but I'm really glad we did. Before I get into your story, for anyone who doesn't know you, obviously I've given you a brief introduction, but it never does justice. Give us the bird's eye overview, none of the detailed story, just what your agency does, how many people you are, where you're based, that kind of stuff. And then we'll go and find out how you got here.
Okay, sure. So I'm Mertez Lobato. I'm the CEO and founder of AGM Tech Solutions. We are a women-owned, Latina-owned IT staffing firm that specializes in providing IT talent to companies, Fortune 500 companies and mid-market across the US. Our company is headquartered here in New Jersey. We are about 25 internal employees with about 150 consultants working for our clients.
Amazing. That was clear, crisp. I like it. And you're, what is it, nearly 6 years, 5.5 years old or so?
Yeah, we started the company at the end of 2018. So about five and a half years.
It goes quick, right?
Oh my goodness, so quick.
I started Hoxo 7 years ago next week. I started my business.
Wow, yeah. Congrats. I love the number 7.
I know. I can't believe it though. I'm like, I was literally last night just reflecting on that, like the February before we launched it in the March, and just how different life was and how much fear I had. You know, could I do it? Was I capable of it? One thing I've always done, and I'm sure we'll get into a bit of this, is, you know, I've always probably started things when I'm not ready. I think 90% of the things that have worked well for me, I've just gone for and not procrastinated over. And so many people just, they're always waiting for that right time. And I don't know for you, but for me, there was no right time. And I'm so grateful I took the plunge when I did in 2017.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, I think we hear that, you know, from so many people. And we need to see more of those stories, because those are really, it's just good examples, you know, for people that are trying to go for a different career or a different position in the company. It's like, do I have what it takes? And I think the more we hear stories and examples, the more encouragement we provide, you know, to people that want to do something different with their lives and just not sure, you know, if it is the right time or if they have what it takes.
Yeah. Well, I believe most people listening to this can do it. And let's find out how you've done it. So you started life in Brazil, I believe, and now you're in the USA, right? So tell us, how did you get to living in the US?
Yes. So I was born and raised in Brazil in a very, very small town. I mean, literally dirt road, small town with my family, got a family of four, you know, I have three siblings in Brazil. My whole family is still in Brazil. I'm the only one here.
Wow.
So, you know, sitting around the dinner table growing up, you always hear about how amazing this country is. America is, you know, the dreamland. And, you know, I had known people that came here. So it was, you know, it was a dream of mine to come to America. I was trying to pursue to go to college in Brazil at the time. And I approached my parents and I said, you know, I really would love to go to America, learn English. That was like, I had such
Could
a
you great speak passion some English for it. At that point?
No, I did not speak any English, but I, you know, I just love the language. I would listen to music, right? So, you know, to my surprise, my parents said yes and agreed to let me come, which I thought it was insane for them to let a, you know, 20, 21 year old come to a country that they had no family, no English, no nothing. So, yeah, I said goodbye to my parents and, you know, with $1,000 in my pocket, and not knowing anyone here, I came to pursue the American dream. To be honest with you, I didn't come to stay. I came because I wanted to learn English and then go back to Brazil.
Yeah.
That was my goal. I said, I want to come learn English, go to school here, and then go back to Brazil because my family was, you know, established there and everything. We're very close. But after 6 months of living in America, I absolutely fell in love with this country. And I remember calling my parents and saying, I'm not going back. And, you know, they were disappointed, obviously.
How far is the flight from where you were to where you grew up?
So, gosh, I live, it's like in the middle of Texas, nowhere. So it's, you know, it was literally a 5-hour drive to the next airport city. And then an hour flight to Sao Paulo. From Sao Paulo to here, it's about 9-10 hours flight.
Wow. So yeah, it's not just, I'm just asking that for the European listeners, because we, you know, I can get to Egypt in like 4 hours, right? So it's right. Like, you know, it's a much bigger scale we're talking about for yeah. A lot of your travel. It's a long, long Maybe. Way. Was the time zone yeah. quite similar though? Because it's on it's in the straight line. So is it?
Yeah, it's about 2-hour difference. Sometimes yeah. it could go as far as 3 hours difference.
That must be that's helpful, right? It's a bit like South Africa yeah. for us. We're 11 hours away, but because the time zone works, it feels a lot easier to communicate.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what did you do when you landed in the US? Like, what were you obviously studied, and then what was the how did you progress from studies to working?
So I didn't go to college here. I don't have a formal education, and my goal was to study English. You know, I did, you know, I went through the journey of any immigrant when you come to this country. I cleaned homes for 5 years. I was a housekeeper. And, you know, I had to find ways, you know, and means to support myself. You know, even though my family had business in Brazil, you know, it's very expensive to, you know, when you come to the country, to this country. So I cleaned homes and babysat and, you know, worked in restaurants. And then 5 years when my English was, you know, when I felt comfortable and confident in my English, then I pursued, you know, that I worked myself up into corporate America. So in 2005, I started my career in technology sales for a company called eNeighborhoods. And, you know, we used to sell this marketing software to the real estate industry. So that's when my corporate America industry started in America.
Wow. So did you have any formal English coach? Like, did you have a tutor or anything? Or was that just picked up through living?
No, I didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Really? I mean, I would just listen to the radio constantly, TV. I would go to work and come home and, you know, put my head on the books and just study English every single day.
So you weren't like surrounding yourself with Brazilians and living in putting Brazilian radio on, which I'm sure you could have, but you didn't. I didn't.
You know, it's such a good point that you make, because a lot of Brazilians, they do that when they come here. They go to Brazilian supermarkets, only Brazilian restaurants. They just want to live. I didn't want that. I really wanted to immerse myself in the American culture.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. That was my focus.
Yeah, I know that because my ex was Turkish and her mum had been in the UK for 25 years and could barely speak English, because Turkish radio, Turkish TV, Turkish restaurants, Turkish supermarket, same thing. And you know, there's literally a Turkish newspaper in London, so you can like, you could just get by without it. I mean, how she drove a car and read the road signs, I have no idea, but she got by. So you go from cleaning homes to getting a, and you again, there's one thing doing a job in English, but there's another thing selling in English, right? Because you've got to, that's a different skill set that most people who speak English can't do. Never mind, you know. So how did you find your ability there? And I guess what worked for you in that sales role?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So, you know, I grew up with, you know, I have to say I had a front row seat in watching my parents run businesses. You know, my parents back home, they had retail businesses, clothing stores, supermarkets, all that. So I already had the people skills of like, you know, interacting with clients and all that. I have to say waitressing really gave me that skill of like talking to people and like, you know, developing my English. So even though my English wasn't perfect, I, you know, I learned, you know, from waitressing. But I remember my first job in corporate America with this company called The Neighborhoods, you know, you had to make 100 cold calls a day and your sales was over the phone calling, you know, calling real estate agents and you're selling the software. And I remember my, you know, I sat like with a lot of cubes around me and my colleagues would make fun of me because I would say like, hey, do you have a penny hand? Like, you know, like it was very like I had an accent and it would make fun of me. Oh my God, look at how she's talking. And within 3 months, I became the top salesperson of that company. So I, you know, I didn't let those things stop me. I just, you know, I like if I didn't know something, I would ask, hey, how do you say this? How do you say that? But it's honestly constantly studying. So it was, I think it's a combination of obviously my, you know, my parents and just the experience that I had in Brazil of dealing with people. And then just learning, like on the day I would hear somebody on the phone and however they said it, I would copy it and then repeat it.
So. I love that. You're literally soaking it up like a sponge. So what was it that made you the top salesperson within, was it 3 months or 3 years? 3 months?
No, 3 months, literally so
what,
within
what would you say,
months.
What was it about your, obviously you got the language then, what was your approach to it and how did you suddenly rise to the top?
So I'm a person of, I'm a high achiever. And when you set a challenge before me, I, you know, I said, you know, I will go out of my way to accomplish that. So whenever, you know, I saw this one guy and he was the top salesperson and I said, well, if he can be that, so can I. I just had that belief about myself. If somebody could do something, so could I, nothing would stop me. So I think it was just, you know, I would constantly go to the top salespeople of the company and learn from them. And I would just set that bar for myself. No, if he could be number one, so can I. So it was, I think it was just hard work, just really study what they were doing right. And then obviously, you know, learn from your leaders. I would meet with my leader at the time and ask, you know, how can I say this better? How can I close this customer better? How can I rebuttal this, you know, this objection? So it was just like constant hard work and looking to out, you know, outperform myself.
And you got to a point in that job, you're top of the tree. So then how long till you got into recruitment? How did you move into recruitment? Tell us that story.
Yeah. So I got married and moved to New Jersey and, you know, wasn't, you know, I was no longer satisfied where I was at the company at the time selling, you know, this software. And a recruiter called me out of the blue and said, hey, you know, we've got this job here, you know, in IT staffing and would love to send you for an interview. And I knew nothing about IT staffing. Now, remember, like, even though I was selling a marketing software, I didn't know about this industry. I didn't even know this industry existed. IT, that sounded like Chinese to me when she said that. I'm like, what's IT? Much less Java, Oracle, data, anything. So I went for an interview and I said yes to the job that I knew. I didn't know what I was going to do in terms of like what the job was really required. All I knew is that I was going to deal with customers and, you know, all the basics, the foundation of building relationships with customers and selling a service. But I had to learn what IT staffing was. And yeah, so I said yes. That was in 2008. And that's when my experience began in the IT staffing industry, which I absolutely love.
And was that like an end-to-end recruitment role? Was that like finding customers 360, filling your own jobs? Or was it more of a account manager?
It was an account manager role. So my job was to go find clients, to find, you know, business and opportunities. And we had a delivery of recruitment team that would then work on those jobs.
Right. So you didn't actually fill the jobs. You just won the business. And did you still manage the business once you signed it?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So how did you then evolve into owning your own business? Because again, most people I know who start businesses have got a really well-rounded skill set. Like it's rare that they've just done sales and not done delivery. And did you move into that or how did it, how did that evolve for you?
Yeah, so actually my job at the very first company didn't last long. It was right in 2008, 2009. Right. As you know, there's a big recession in America. I got laid off literally 9 months into that job, and I was, you know, I was devastated. I had never been laid off before. So then I went to work at another IT staffing company, and that's truly where my career took off. You know, I became the top salesperson of that company, worked there for 7 years, and, you know, it was really an incredible experience. That's really where I learned the business, where I was taught the business. You know, my leader really helped me in my development, and really became obsessed with this industry and passionate about working with clients, helping them solve their technology problems through talent acquisition, connecting people with opportunities, and, you know, working side by side with my delivery team to meet those needs of the client. So I spent 7 years at that company, and really that's where I would say my career really flourished, where I became, you know, an expert in this business. So from there, I went to another company for 2 years and felt very limited. You know, I've always had this entrepreneurial mindset, this entrepreneurial spirit to go do something great and bigger. So when I left that company, went to this other company, I just wasn't utilizing all my skills and doing the very thing that I believed in. So at the end of 2018, I just woke up one day and I said, you know what? I came to America to pursue something great. You know, like, what if I start my own company? Not to mention, there's not a lot of women-owned and Latina-owned, minority-owned IT staffing firms. As you know, it's very male-dominated. There's about 20,000 IT staffing firms, right, in U.S. Yeah. So I said, you know, I had the courage, and I said, I'm going to start my own business. And
when was that? So when did the penny drop that you were going to be your own business owner? What was it? How soon before? How close to actually doing it was it?
I think it was beginning of 2018. You know, I remember I was talking to a couple of leaders, and they said, Marcus, you know, you should really do this. And, you know, this person really encouraged me too. And I just, you know, like I said, you know, I've always believed, if, you know, when I left Brazil, I was going to come to America to do and make something out of myself. And it was just a matter of, obviously, I had a lot of self-doubt. You know, I had never owned a business. I had never hired employees. I had never managed anyone. I was a salesperson. But it was that desire of like, hey, be bigger than, you know, than you are. Go and reach more than you are. And just believing that I could actually do this. So, you know, and then I just decided, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I've got nothing to lose. And I'll never know if this is going to work unless I say yes and go after it.
And if I'm correct in the dates, you must have had a, like, is it two kids by then and maybe a third on the way, or a third just been born? Like,
that's 2020? Right. Yeah. So I had two kids, and I had just given birth to my third child.
So
yeah.
Like, not only are you, you know, have you never owned a business, but you're a mother of a, you know, and I'm in that boat, right? I've got a 5-month-old. I know what it's like. So how the hell do you start a business when you're, and you've got a baby and you've got all this other responsibility, which mums do.
Yeah. And you know, I had a lot at stake, right? You know, I was the main breadwinner of our home, and I had to quit my job, earning a 6-figure income job to start this. Like I said, I think, you know, the same way when I said, hey, I'm saying goodbye to my family, you know, like having that courage to, like, you know, step into the unknown without knowing, like, that, I just go back to that place of like, you know what, I can do this. Obviously, I have an amazing support system. My husband is incredible, but it was a big decision. You know, I had to meet with my family and discuss that with them, because again, there was a lot at stake. We had just purchased a new house. Here I am quitting a job that I have a steady income to start a business with no employees and no money, no clients yet, and said, you know what, let's do this. I'm a person of big faith. And
so was it your husband then that would do more of the childcare in the daytime and allow you to, or how did you logistically manage it? Because there's a lot to do in a day, you know, with three kids. Yeah. I know. And I'm so grateful I started my business 7 years ago and I had none of that, because I think, Christ, if I was trying to build something brand new now, I don't know how I'd do it. So how did you logistically manage it?
Well, you need all the help that you can get. So at the time, I had a nanny that lived with me. So my parents, obviously, not my parents, I'm sorry, my husband helped me a lot. Like truly, he really helped me a lot. He worked, you know, I had a regular job, and he would help me in the morning with the kids. I had a nanny at home, and I mean, you make it work, right? My mother-in-law would help, you know, when needed. But I just stay focused on what I wanted to achieve, and leverage help, you know, those around me, obviously. And yeah, and then we got started.
And how did you set the business up then? Was it were you in an office? Did you work from home? Like, paint the picture of those really early days in.
Sure. Yeah. So once I said yes, you know, and now remember, I had never been an entrepreneur. I didn't know how to set a website up. I didn't even know how to establish my company, my corporate LLC. All those things I had to learn. And I'm like, okay, how do we even start? You know, when you're a salesperson in the company, you don't get to see the back office operations. You don't even know how the business is ran and operated. So, but again, I think leveraging the people around you, leveraging the ecosystem, the network of people that is, you know, have been where you're going. And that's what I did. I would call all my friends and staffing. Hey, I'm thinking about starting a company. How do you do this? How do you build a website? Like, how do you pick a name for your business? That's another thing. Like all the little things. Do I need to set up a business account? Like, I knew nothing about the business. So I started the company, and you know, first, you know, I said, okay, I want to be a women-owned, minority-owned company. Wanted to, you know, picked a name. By the way, AGM stands by the three middle initials of my kids.
No.
So it's Ashley, Grace, and Michael. It was really hard to pick a name. Every name was picked at the time. So I said, you know what, let's go to AGM Tech Solutions. And then, you know, little by little, I started to set up the company with, you know, name, website, and email address, and all those things. And I remember starting the company, having the concept, okay, let's start the company is one thing. But then what do you do next? You need a client. So what I did was I had worked at a previous company, and I had some relationships there. So I approached this client, and I said, hey, I'm thinking about starting my, I went to the chief of procurement officer at the time. And I said, I'm thinking about starting my company. Would you support me? Would you make me a vendor here? And to my surprise, I'll never forget the tears walking out of that Fortune 500 company. They said, yes. They said, we believe in you. You have an amazing reputation. Go get your company set up, and we're going to make you a vendor. And that was like, oh my gosh, I hit the lottery, you know, that day. So that's what I did. It took me 3 months. And once I got the company established, you know, we became a vendor at this client. But I had no team, Sean. I was one person at the time. I had no
And you're, and
computers.
like you say, looking at
Didn't
your
have
track
anything.
record, it was built on a delivery and front office model, right? Where you split the work. So, you know, in the UK, it's very common for someone to do the whole job on their own. And I did that. I was a 360 recruiter, right? Whereas in the US, it does feel like delivery and sales and account management is all split more. And I think we're moving down that way here now.
Yeah.
So how did you manage it? Did you fill the jobs yourself in the early days and just do the whole thing?
So yeah, that's a great point. Now, obviously, that still happens here in America if it's more the direct placement model, but we do IT staff augmentation mostly on the contract side. So yes, you have a team of delivery, which is just the recruitment team, and then you've got the account managers managing the clients. So what I did was, as soon as I started and I got, you know, to be, you know, the MSA to be on this client, I then went and hired a part-time recruiter. Now remember, I got no funding. I went to about 3 to 5 banks, and I got denied a loan. You know, access to capital is very challenging for anyone starting a business. I didn't have a formal education, right, on none of those things. So it was very hard for me to even get the funding to start. But again, didn't let those things stop me. Started with my own money. So the first thing I did was I said, you know what? I'm not going to pursue any shiny objects. I'm going to stay focused on the business. So I focused on bringing business and then finding the delivery team. So at first, what I did was I hired a few recruiters part-time, independent, like no salary. So if they made a placement, I would then pay them because I didn't have salary, I didn't have cash flow to pay them a salary. So as soon as we started putting like a few people on billing, then I started to build cash flow. And then 6 months down the road is when I made my first hire full time.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's like there's moments in that. Can you remember any moments in that first 6 months where you maybe doubted yourself? Can you go
Well, I'll
back?
tell you this. So I mean, every single day, I remember when I went to meet with a procurement officer, and he said, okay, we're going to put you on the list, but you got to make 30 placements in your first year. And I'm like, 30 placements. I'm like, and no, I had done more than that in my previous career. But when you're just one person's company, you don't even know how, what comes the following day, right? We're talking about everything in the piece of the business, back off operations, everything, right?
Yeah.
So 3 months after I was brought in at this client, and that was my only client at the time, they were doing a big assessment and they said, we have 34 vendors in the vendors list and we're going to decrease to 10 vendors. And the procurement officer looked me in the eye and said, you're not going to make it. You're too small. We have to get you out of the vendors list. And I remember I walked out of that building with tears in my eyes. And I said, God, you didn't take me this far to, you know, to have me hanging and stop now. So I remember I looked her in the eye and I said, I know I'm a small vendor, but I fight like a big one. It was truly the story of the David and Goliath, because they had all these big companies, Tech Systems, Insight Global, and they wanted to remain the top 10 vendors to be, you know, these national.
Yeah, they're rationalizing it. Yeah.
Them, right. So I remember, and I had just quit my job. I gave up everything. I was about to lose the one client that I needed to get the company off the ground. So, you know, we went through an RFP and then I went to work. I hired some more part-time recruiters. And I did not let that distract me. I focused on the business and I just focused on meeting clients and delivery. So then we went through the RFP, and to my surprise, they came back and said, you made it. You're going to stay on the list. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So we went to work. You know, I remember in my first year, she said, you need to make 30 placements. We made 100 placements. Wow. In my first year in business with very limited resources. But again, I think it's, you know, a lot of times you start the company and you think you got to have all the things in place. I got to have a beautiful website. I got to have a big, you know, all the processes, all the systems in place. You don't really need a lot to get the work done if you really focus on what's right in front of you and make sure that that is what, you know, that's what you're focusing on. That's what needs to be, you know, taken care of. And again, focus on results. That's always been my mantra.
No, I agree. I agree. It's about just getting, rolling those sleeves up, right? And just going for it. So how did the business evolve then? So if we look at the end of the first year, what did it look like from a client base, revenue, people, et cetera?
Yeah. So no, and when we started the company, I started the company remotely. We didn't have an office, so I worked from home. And I did that strategically too, because as I thought about the future of our company, and again, this is before COVID even was here, I had no idea COVID was kind of, you know, we're going to go through COVID, but I strategically wanted a team that was diverse, you know, that was diverse and that was, you know, just set up in different parts of the country. So, did not see a need to have an office. So I started hiring people in different areas of the country. So in the very first year in business, we did $9 million in revenue.
Wow.
And that was amazing. I said, you know what, we got this. And I think, you know, there's many things that contributing to, you know, to our success or growth. One, it was, we're obsessed with client experience and delivery and really having that consultative approach to understand our clients' needs. And we're not a vendor, we're truly a partner. And with that, I think it's also, you know, this recruiting, you can be an amazing salesperson, but if you don't have the right delivery team, it doesn't matter how much business you bring. If you can't deliver, it means nothing to your clients or to, you know, to all the work that you put in. So I've always been, I think I've done a great job here really instilling that vision into our team and really teaching them on how to service our clients the way that their needs are, the way that they want to be serviced. So just really building a team and developing a team and just coaching them and becoming that model, that consultative approach model, where I knew that the more we became that way, the more business we're going to earn from our clients. So first year in business, I think it was just me as a salesperson, and probably about three recruiters, I think at the time, maybe two actually. Second year in business, we did $16 million in revenue. Again, still remote working. Third year in business, we did $24 million in revenue. Now my team started to grow to probably about four recruiters at the time and another salesperson. Fourth year in business, we did $30 million in revenue. Last year, we did about $26 million. So we've done over $100 million in sales in the last 5 years total. Today, we've got a team of 25 people. I've got a small team in India as well that, you know, it's a small delivery team that's growing. But yeah, we, you know, we've grown leaps and bounds. We're recognized by Inc. 5000, one of the fastest growing companies in America, twice on a row. We just got another recognition today that we made the Inc. regionals here for this area. And yeah, I mean, we're focused on growth and making sure that we're making an impact and a difference in the companies and the lives of the people that we get to work with.
Wow. There's so much there. The bit that, well, you should be so proud of yourself, right? Because it's incredible what you've achieved. And if we look at, you know, 1 minute you literally were cleaning people's houses and babysitting at one point, and then now you're running, you've sold 100 million's worth of business in 5 years. It's insane. So well done. I'm interrupting today's episode to give you a message from our brand new sponsor. Now, this company are called Untappd, and everyone knows that Hoxo, through this podcast, I've explained that we've built our team internationally, heavily in South Africa, okay? And I get questions all the time from clients and people who listen to the show, like, how have you done it? What was the process, etc. Well, I've partnered with a business that can ultimately reveal it all, share it all, and help you do the same, right? Because look, it's been a tricky year for the sector, and many of people through uncertain times have had to streamline operations. However, you know, accessing low-cost resources internationally has proven to be a bit of a cheat code for some people, including Hoxo. But anyone who's tried it, like us, it's very difficult. A lot of work, process to get it right. So this company, Untappd, are one of the hottest companies in the market. They've helped Hoxo, they're helping our clients. And they specifically look at companies in the UK, US, Middle East, and Australia transition to using remote individuals and building full offshore sourcing and recruitment solutions. So they source talent pools from places like South Africa and the Philippines. And we're talking about experienced talent here. We're not talking about graduates with no experience. This is like people with 3 to 5 years recruitment experience, and integrate them into your UK team, okay? So they work remotely, but plug into your UK team. They put around 3,000 candidates per month through an intense 4-stage interview and online testing process to find the top 1%. Or 30 people, and secure these people for work with recruitment agencies like yourself. You know, all candidates are benchmarked against UK competency frameworks and the way in which you would hire in the UK. So we're not talking about cheap for the sake of being cheap. We're talking about international, experienced people just living in lower cost locations. So it's a really simple process if you want to work with these guys. You pay a deposit to kick off their search. They then provide a candidate shortlist in 14 days. And then you can put people through your own process to hire them permanently, or there's a freelance option. So if you just want to try before you buy, they can employ them. You pay a daily rate and it's a freelance option. Untappd are totally transparent with all the salaries and fees. But, you know, we're talking about, you'll still pay about 70% less than a UK equivalent in that role. So it's a no-brainer to complement your existing team to handle surplus demand and ease cost pressures. You know, if you're not using this to rip up your business and rebuild it with global resources, then you're probably gonna fall behind eventually. So due to demand and capacity, they're only operating on a waiting list right now. So if you wanna be part of their waiting list, go to www.tryuntappd.com. Okay, www.tryuntappd.com, and check out their information. Make sure you say that you listen to the RAG podcast, because they'll do you a very special deal as well. Right. Go and check them out. Back to the show.
Thank you.
But the bit that really stands out for me is that you almost built your business in a post-COVID way, pre-COVID. So like, if I just give you my story quickly, like I went into the pandemic with an office in London with 15 staff physically together every day. Within a week of COVID, I cut the contract on the office and we've never gone back, right? And we are now, you know, all over the world. We've got clients all over the world. We're fully remote. We love it. We've embraced it. And I think, you know, I wish I didn't even think about it. Like, it wasn't even an option. The way I was trained in recruitment was like, you don't work from home ever. So when I started my own business, it was just the way we thought, whether we had to have we had to meet every day. Like, it was just physically the way we worked. So right now, you know, there's so many recruitment companies starting up in the mindset that you are, but I didn't know anyone back then. Like, I didn't know anyone back then. So what was it? You say it was cash, but tell me about how did you see, again, you're recruited nationally. So you need people dotted around, but why do you need them dotted around? Is it so they could physically meet clients, meet candidates? Well, like, what was the rationale behind spreading people out when, you know, perhaps some would say you'd perform a lot better if you're all in a room in New Jersey or whatever?
Yeah, and you know, you're right, and I love, you know, I love you sharing, you know, that part of your story too. I mean, today we actually have an office in New Jersey, and you know, today, you know, there's, I think there's always going to be challenges whether you have a remote team and not a localized team, because it does help build a better culture of the team and development of those individuals, right? But I think for me, you know, my vision is, okay, we're going to support national clients. Clients have different needs in different markets, and if you have a local person in that market, it's much easier for you to develop a deep footprint and just knowledge about what's happening. You know, if I have a recruiter in Georgia or in Virginia, that person is going to help me, you know, that person is going to help us educate about companies around the market and where candidates are coming from, and, you know, technology that we're fighting. So it was more strategic in that way, where, because I knew, you know, where our needs are going to come from. And I said, I needed a team there because I want to make sure that we're well equipped and set up to serve the needs of our clients. But, you know, from a company perspective today, we're well positioned here in New Jersey. And I just, you know, we opened our office here 2 years ago, and I want to continue to expand as well as in Georgia. I don't have a need to have a team set up in many different states. We've got employees in Texas, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, India. I don't need to have it in every single state, but I think it does help depending on where your clients are sitting today, because I think it just helps you really educate yourselves and the team on what.
How would you say the candidate and client relationships post-COVID, like obviously pre-COVID, it was trying to get in front of as many people as you could, right? What? How do you operate now? Because again, are you guys still on flights across the country meeting customers, or is it all done on Zoom? Like, how is the mechanics of the business when it comes to engaging with candidates and clients these days?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I think it depends on the model and the types of clients that you are servicing today. Some clients, they're no touch accounts, right? So you may be dealing with an MSP program where you can't really have conversations with the hiring managers. Most of our clients that we deal with, they are direct clients. They're, you know, direct driven relationship accounts. So you are, you need to be meeting with those clients. So definitely through COVID, everything went Zoom, right? All the meetings were via Zoom. Today, it's a combination of both. I mean, our clients went back on site, and here in America, Sean, there's a lot of company that's going back on site 4 days a week, some even 5 days a week now. Wow. So I think, you know, clients are going back, and yes, you got to be on site meeting your clients. I mean, if you're not in front of, you know, in front of them and their face, you're not going to be the top salesperson, the top vendor for that company. So it's a combination of both. But for those clients that are on site, obviously, you know, our sales team is there meeting with them.
So how is it literally, because it's such a big country, again, you got to fly around, you got to actually send teams around the country to meet customers on the ground.
So right now, our deepest footprint is New Jersey and Georgia.
Right.
So right now, I've got sales team that support our clients here and there. And that's where, you know, we go to meet our clients. Now, if there's a client that's maybe in a different state, let's say Chicago, where I've been, you know, then we'll go there. But right now, you know, we're more centralized in these two states.
And what has been your strategy for winning business? Like, how would you describe the approach to, obviously, I know once you get a client, you're going to deliver for them and you're going to throw everything you can at it. But how are you opening the door with new business?
Great question. I think that my number one strategy is, how can you become an extension of your customer? Like, truly. Not just, you know, companies, you know this, it's very saturated. There's 20,000 staffing companies in US alone. I don't know if there's anything really unique about AGM. Yes, we're Latina owned, we're women owned, but everybody's doing the same thing. But it's become so transactional in this industry. And clients know. They know when you're just there to place a body. Yeah. They also know when you're just there when they have business. I've never had that mindset. So my mindset is, we're going to win business by truly becoming a partner and an extension of their team. And by that, I mean, do you really study their business? I mean, I spent hours and hours studying about my client's business. I know about all of their upcoming initiatives. I know what's happening in the market. I know what their spend is. I know what their, you know, their training technologies, their innovation, what they're focusing on. So I think, you know, if you can position yourself as an extension of their team to truly understand their challenges, how their culture is set up, how their team, their organizational environment is and landscape is, they look at you differently. They're like, you know what? here's somebody that actually knows about my business. And I've always taken that consultative approach. And I think that's why we've been able to grow so quickly within the clients that we serve today, is because we take that approach. And I think when you're able to anticipate the clients of your needs, when you show up differently, when, you know, when something happens, do you run away? Do you anticipate the needs of your clients? Do you address them? Like, the clients value that partnership. So that's been our model.
It's how really- do you get new clients though? Is it referrals, or are you still cold calling? Are you using LinkedIn? Like, what's been your strategy to opening? Because again, I can see how you're going to land and expand in a business, but it's still, how do you get those new logos in the door?
Yeah. And, you know, that is actually something that is a challenge for any business. Mm-hmm. And that is a focus of, you know, of our company right now is bringing new logos and winning new business. The first thing I do is leverage my network. I think any person, whether you're a salesperson today or you're starting a company, who do you know? Make a list of who you know. And every client, to be honest with you, every client that we've been able to bring into AGM has been through network, through relationships. So I always go back to, who do I know? Where is that person now? And I, you know, and again, that's been my strategy. Going to conferences, you know, there's lots of conferences here where you got an opportunity to meet all these big corporations, right? Me being part of the WeBank conference, you know, the WeBank Association. So I get an opportunity to introduce myself, but it's, you know, following those people that worked with you in the past. I mean, somebody that was a VP at a company today, a director, they moved on to another company. Follow them, go connect with them, go meet with them again. So that's been my strategy, is leveraging who we know.
Leverage who you know.
Relationships. That's right.
That is literally as well. I love how you've said that, because I think that's what's wrong with recruitment, is that people are so focused on what's next, they forget what's gone before. And, you know, if my whole business is about helping recruiters build their brand on LinkedIn, right? And it's not branding for the vanity, but it's to win business, it's to make more money. And if you think about, like, I've literally been ramming this home so much recently, is like, if you look at your first degree network, so how many connections have you got on LinkedIn right now, Mertes?
So I have over 10,000.
Right, so 10,000 people. Now, the reality of you connecting one-on-one with them on an annual basis is zero. There's no chance, right? You'll get around it as closely as you can, but you're also a mom of three, you're a business owner. The priorities are there, right? And the average recruiter has 5,000 connections. So, and what we know, because we've studied LinkedIn, is that 50% on average of your connections will visit the platform once a week. So at least 5,000 people in your case are on LinkedIn every week. So via your LinkedIn platform time, which can be really short, but really powerful, you know, you can actually speak to those people consistently every single week. I still have clients now from 2019 that I've literally like, hey, how's it going? And they're like, they know about my baby. They know about everything I'm doing because of my content, because of my brand, right? It's not reliant on me phoning them all the time and updating them. It's like, I'm doing it at scale. And it's the same mindset. It's still taking the approach that all these contacts I've built, like, all right, yeah, we can go after new people all day, but actually it's going to be an easier win if I ring someone who I've worked with before, because they're going to give me the time, you know? It's incredible. And I really think that's where, like, AI, people are obsessed with AI right now. You know, can I use automation to blast 100,000 emails out next month? You can. But 100,000 of those emails don't know who you are. So 99% of them aren't going to reply because they don't know who you are. They don't trust you. You might get 1% reply rate, but 99% of 100,000 people have got a negative perception of you as a spammy agency now.
That's right.
And yet you're ignoring the 10,000 connections you got on LinkedIn. It's bonkers. Like, literally, it's what I talk about all day. So I'm glad you said that. It's nuts.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I mean, your network truly is your wealth. And, you know, I'm a person that, listen, if I'm going to go, you know, if I'm walking by, you know, a hall and I see a cleaning lady or somebody that's just, I don't know, a bus boy, I say hello to them. I treat everybody the same. You never know. The power of connection is so powerful. I mean, I've been able to win business from relationships because I took the time to call them and say hello. You never know who in your network, within your circle, is going to be the next, you know, door opener for you. You just don't know. And, like, I teach that a lot here in my company, where, like, really pay attention, go out of your way to meet people, connect with people, have a genuine interest in them. And like, to your, you know, like, to your point, I'm probably sitting on tons of business today that And again, if I put more focus into that, I mean, imagine the amount of doors that I can open for our company. And I truly, you're 100% right. I think that is the number one biggest and right strategy to leverage is who you know. Start with what you have.
And what you said there about saying hello to people is, because you've been there, right? You've worked in those jobs. I'm the same. I used to, when I moved to Australia when I was 23, I went from being a school teacher in the UK, which I had to get qualifications for, to working in a coffee shop. And the way some of the staff in the businesses around the coffee shop spoke to me was like really, really patronizing and condescending. And I hated it. I couldn't, I was a professional teacher in my career in the UK, and I'm just doing this to get up the, just to find my feet. And the way a lot of them spoke to me was so rude, and they didn't ever want to know my name. Like, I remember I'd say their name because I'd have to write it down on the coffee cups. Yeah. But they never go, I'd be like, hey, Steve, how's it going? He'd be like, hey, mate. And then he'd be like, yeah, what my, I'm like, usual, flat white or whatever. He's like, yeah. And he never once asked my name. And I thought, this could go on for a month. And I'm like, this is rude. So now, like, I went to Dubai with my kids at Christmas, and we stayed in an Airbnb, and there was like a, maybe three or four security guards who would rotate on the main reception. And every time I walked in, I said hello, and I asked them how they were, and I got their names, and I shook their hands, and my kids are like, why are you so interested in these guys? Like, they're just security guards. I was like, it's not, but I don't want anything from them. But you know what? There was a moment where my friend came and he needed to park and he wasn't supposed to. And they opened up the and they let him in and they said, oh, just park in the corner, no problem. So I was like, you don't realize what's going to, these little moments, you're going to need someone.
Yeah.
It matters, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I love this business so much. You got to value people. You are nothing. You're no one. I say that, this company has been, we've been, incredibly blessed by having the growth that we've had. And I did, I certainly did not do this alone. And, it's been an incredible team of people with the same vision, the same mindset. But you got to value people. You got to be constantly adding value to people. And like, that's why I love this industry, because we truly connect people to opportunities. And we get, every time we make a phone call, right, Sean, to somebody and say, you've got a job. You don't know the tears that they're having in that moment. You don't know the impact you're having in that family. You're about to change somebody's life. And it's like, I mean, it's so rewarding. But yes, the more we learn to value people and connect with people, I think the more successful. It's like, learn to give them, and, if you, if you give them what they need, you're always going to get what you want, the famous Zig Ziglar, quote.
For sure. So tell me about your role now then. So you got 25 people, you're 6 years or so down the line. What does the CEO of AGM do? Like, how would you describe your day to day now compared to maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah, great question. So, starting your company, there's so many milestones that you want to achieve, right? I had to make, decisions early on about, how fast did we want to grow, and, how are we going to set up this company? So I've been hands-on, like boots on the ground, Sean, selling and doing all the things, hiring and building the company, putting processes in place, systems to make sure that we're efficiently, that we're efficient to grow from 10 million to 50 million to 100 million. So we've been working, simultaneously in all different areas. Right now, I think in the past 6 months, I've really been focusing on stepping into the seat of a CEO, which is really strategy, vision for growth, adding leadership team into my company. And again, there's, you have all these things that come at you every single day. What do you want to focus first? So for me right now, I want to take this company from 30 million to 50 million and then 50 to 100 million. So right now I am looking at the business holistically. We don't want to compromise our delivery. We don't want to compromise how we serve our clients. We've grown organically, and I like that model, without compromising. Nobody is a number in my company. Everybody has a seat at the table. So I want to continue to expand. So I'm focused on growth, bringing new logos, adding leadership team, adding to the sales team, to hopefully get to the numbers that, that we set for ourselves. So it's focused on doing the right things for the clients, doing the right things for the customers, doing the right thing for the employees here, to make sure that we continue to be successful in all different areas.
So you're still in client pitches and dealing with problems and solutions, and you're still sleeves up involved with the team on all fronts.
I am still very heavily involved with my team. I mean, I'm a hands-on person in terms of coaching development. So a lot of times I'm still joining meetings, client meetings. Sometimes I still go on meetings with them. You know, when you are the face of the company, the CEO, especially because it's a woman-owned, I think it does make an impact. Some of the clients want to hear your story, right? They, you know, there's that trust factor, right? That you can, you know, offer and influence. But yes, I think that no matter how much we grow, I still want to be, you know, somewhat very, you know, hands-on in some areas of the company. I mean, you know, it depends on how big we grow, but I think it's important for me to be involved and be still have those conversations with end clients. I think they appreciate that.
100%. Where are you heading? So if we're going to look at the future, let's say we were going to bring you back on in 2 years time, where do you think you're going to be? Like, what's the vision and what you're trying to create?
So I would love, again, my next vision is for us to be in a couple of different markets and grow where, we, you know, the markets that we are, that we have established ourselves as a company. I want it to triple, you know, I think I want it. My number one goal is expand our sales team, right? That's how you grow. You got to make investments in sales. You got to make investments on your delivery team. That's one thing that I've always said I'll never compromise. It's sales and delivery. So, and but again, and another challenge I'll add to any entrepreneur starting a business is how do you really identify your ICP, right? Because, you know, when you're starting a business, you say yes to every company. You just want their business.
Of course, you need it.
So you need it. And I have to say, I'm still in that phase where we're growing. And I think we're still like define, okay, who do we want to service? Because, you know, there's so much to learn here in this journey. So I'm in this phase right now where we're like, okay, who really is our ideal client? Where can we really be successful? But I think we've laid out some really good foundations in our company in terms of the team, our delivery model, and, you know, and internal proven process that really works, our consultative approach to selling. So I just want to expand and duplicate what we've done and then hopefully expand 2-3 times.
Wow. You know, no one's got it figured out, don't you? Like, we know, right. No one, you say like the ICP or whatever, everyone's got, every company on the planet, I don't care who they are, how successful they look, they've not got it figured out. Everyone's still got something that's bothering them about their business that they haven't figured out. And we're the same. Like, you know, we've done phenomenal things over the last few years. Like, my business has transformed since the pandemic, and it's actually changed shape completely. Like, so we still ultimately solve the same problem, but in a completely different way. And a way that I love. But again, it's still growth and success in that direction has created new problems that we didn't know we'd have. And I think the day you have no more problems, the day you're probably, your business is done.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you're right. And I love you sharing your journey. By the way, you and I need to get together so I can learn about your services and your products there. But I think, you know, that's the beautiful journey about being an entrepreneur is that you get to innovate every day. You know, your clients, you're serving one clients that may have engineering services and needs today. And all of a sudden, you didn't know that client had IT services or this and that. You got to innovate. You got to become whatever it is that you want to be. It really depends, you know, what you want to be, right? Like, do you want to go that route? Do you want to service? But I love that every day is a different day and we have a different challenge every single day and our clients have different needs. And all of a sudden you got to become the expert in this Gen AI thing. It's like, you know, I mean, it keeps us going. I mean, it really, I love that. I think that's one of the things that I love about running a business is that there's always something new to learn. I'm a lifelong learner. You know, that's always been my mindset. And I think that that's what drives us here and certainly drives me.
Fulfillment, never getting bored, always moving forward.
Yeah, fulfillment number one.
So what's life like as candid as you can be? Like, what is life actually like outside of work? So you come to the US as a Brazilian immigrant. I imagine, you know, you might have had a good background, family background, business entrepreneurs in Brazil, but still you talked about the price. I know what it's like over there. You've also then... you've had to do those jobs where you're on like minimum wage to get by. Now you've got a multi-million dollar business. What impact has that actually had on the way you live and how you treat, you know, what life you're providing for your kids? And how do you keep a balance on that as well?
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great question. Never forget where you come from, right? But, you know, don't dare let that define, you know, who you are. I'm a person of courage. And I think my parents have instilled that in me, humble beginnings, and, you know, never despise small beginnings. I never forget where I came from. You know, my mom, you know, started her career by selling hot dogs on the street. And, you know, we still live somewhat simple. You know, I don't let the accolades, the money, all of that get the best out of me. Mm. I think keep your head down, you know, focus on integrity and honesty. You know, it always comes back to you trust. You know, obviously we enjoy, you know, having a company. There's definitely, you know, it's a big commitment when you're responsible for a payroll of 175 people working in your company. Mm. And, you know, and that constant, like, am I a great leader? Like, you know, so, you know, I think for me, it's all what is important. You know, my family is important to me, and I'm constantly having to, like, really work on my schedule and think and rethink. Like, for example, yesterday, I'll give you a perfect example. My daughter was sick at home, and I said, should I stay at home or should I go to work? And my heart was saying, go to work. Like, your employees need to see you there. They need to see you. If they're not there, they're probably going to think, where's Mertes? What is she doing? That was the first thought that came to my mind. Like, you know, I need to be there. But then I said, no, my daughter needs me. And she said, mommy, can you stay with me? And I stayed at home with her. So, like, as an entrepreneur, like, you know, you have those hard moments where you want to be more present with your kids, or you feel like you need to be more present at work. It's a constant, you know, evolving thing, and you have to readjust. You have to prioritize, because I don't want to look back and say I sacrificed my family for this business, nor do I want to say I didn't dream big enough for my business and therefore, you know, I settled for less. But I think it's, you know, constantly looking at, you know, what's right in front of you. Stay true to who you are, those foundation, those critical values that your parents instilled in you. So I let those, you know, be the guiding star for me.
I love it. It's so similar to my journey, because, like, even like, I've just downloaded an app called Headway. It's a bit like this one called Blinkist, where you can get a book in 15 minutes and it gives you like a shorter version. So I'm walking the dogs in the morning, listening to different books, right? And one book was What Successful People Do Before Breakfast. And I listened to this book, and I'll tell you where, because I've, since the baby arrived 5 months ago, I've been doing the school run, the breakfast, the getting the ready, all of that stuff. And I never did that before. So that's put an hour or so into my day, maybe an hour and a half, that I didn't used to need to have. So other things have been pushed, right? So I started to think, the kids have got such a good routine. Do I need to be, could I get them up, but then let them crack on for an hour, take the dogs for a walk, listen to a podcast or whatever, and try and cram more in? And then this book actually made me step back, because it said, what successful do people do before breakfast is they focus on like project, like really high value, but maybe not urgent projects. And you know, that involves the relationships with the most important people in your life. And so I was like, I was almost about to trial going out between 7 and 8 a.m. or 7:20 and 8:20 when they're basically getting themselves ready, because I know they can do it now. I've seen them do it. I've worked with them. To either be in my office or be on the phone or whatever. And then I've realized no, because that's an hour every day I get to spend with these kids. And also your body, your energy, your attitude, it's like an iPhone. You plug it in overnight, you're 100%. By the end of the day, it's on 5 or 10%. So the version of you they get after school, especially when I finish at 6 p.m. and I'm in the house, it's not the same version as 7, 8 a.m. So yeah. Build your relationships when you're most, you know, you've got the energy, you've got that. And I'm a morning guy. So yeah. I've literally changed it. In the last 2 weeks, I said, no, I'm going to carry on. And it's been the best decision I've made.
That's crazy. Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I love when you talk about these new habits, because I feel like, you know, again, it's, you know, how do you prioritize? How do you eliminate certain things? And what are you value? Like, yeah. You know, and we go through different seasons. Right now you have a newborn baby and it's requiring more of you in certain areas. So I think it's so important for you to pause and, you know, and then make adjustments and yes, adopt these new habits into your life, because it's so impactful. And most importantly to those around you, like your kids, like you said, and your wife. And, you know, I know, you know, I have a small practice where I come home, I can literally be on my phone until 10 o'clock at night, nonstop. And when my walk in, you know, at home, my kids, all they know is I'm their mommy. They don't care that I'm a CEO. Mm. So I have a practice now when I come home and as soon as I park my car in the garage, I don't look at my phone.
God.
Because I could literally walk in with my phone like this. And then I'm like, hi, Brianna. And then, but I'm not present.
You're
for
not
them.
Mentally
so
there.
I yeah. shut my phone. I'm like, no, I'm not looking at my phone for the next 30 minutes. I'm going to be there. Like, how's your day? Cause they are like, mommy's home, mommy's home. So yes, it's these little habits that does make a huge difference in your life and your day to day.
And you know what? It all comes down to saying no to things.
Yeah.
Because saying no as an entrepreneur, when you've had to say yes to every bit of business and make it happen, saying no is something that you probably haven't done at the beginning. Maybe in your personal life, you've sacrificed things. But I find now, like I could have, every week I could have 20, 30, 40 meetings with people who want to talk to me about something. And I'd love to do it. And I still want to give people time as much as possible. But there's times where you have to say no to protect your energy and protect the people or your business or whatever it is. And I think if we're going to reflect then on this time, this five and a half, 6 years, and you're going to, what are three things that you could say to someone who's about to go on this journey? And I literally spoke to a guy today who's starting his agency in 30 days time, right? There's so many people listening. Three things that they, tips, advice, steps, anything that you would implore someone launching their recruitment agency in 24 to think about.
Great point. Number one, say yes. Believe that what you do matters. You know, my coach Casey Jacobs taught me this, and this was one of the very first questions that he asked me: do you believe that what you do matters? And that's why I am where I am today. That's why I left Brazil, and that's why I went through what I went through, is because I believed what I do matters. So when you do, when you firmly, deeply believe what you do matters, you let nothing come in your way. You let no negative talk, no disbelief, no lack of funding, no lack of this resources. No. So I would say, believe what you do matters and stay faithful to that calling. Stay faithful to that thing that's calling you. Believe that you can make a difference, and all the other things will be added onto you. All the other things. I would say leverage your ecosystem. Leverage who you know. There's tons and tons of people willing to help you today at no cost. You don't even have to pay somebody to learn, you know, something, a system, a process, things that you need to put in place for your company. There's people there. There's free information. And dream big. You know, make sure that you are dreaming bigger than yourself. I mean, set a vision that's bigger. Communicate that to your employees so that they know that what they're working on, what they're investing their life in, is bigger than themselves, because it has to be bigger than you. Otherwise, you're going to get bored quickly, and you're going to get frustrated quickly. But if it's bigger than you, I want to be better. I want to be the top this. I want to be the biggest impact maker in this community. When you dream bigger than yourself, then all of a sudden you have, you know, it's hard for you to actually put limits in yourself. And more people will come around you and motivate you and just rally with you to accomplish that which you set for yourself.
Mertes, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much. Your energy, your story, it's infectious. I hope people have enjoyed it. If anyone does want to reach out to you and just ask any questions about any part of the journey, are you okay with that? If I tag you on your LinkedIn account and they can message you on there?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a connector in nature. So yes, would love to connect with all of you. And thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I want to give a shout out to our friend Jeanette. She's the one that introduced you and me. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share and introduce myself and share a little bit more about my story and AGM Tech Solutions. It's been
my pleasure. And we'll get you back on in a couple of years and see how you're progressing. Triple the business. That's what we're expecting.
That's right. That would be amazing. Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Pleasure. Thank you as always for listening to today's show. I truly hope that you got value from it. Honestly, it's the only reason I take time every week to ensure that my audience, you guys, future and existing recruitment owners, you're learning from each other to make this industry that I love so much stronger. And today's episode is brought to you by my business, Hoxo. I'm the CEO and founder, and we're on a mission to help brand recruitment agencies and their people better. I want to help people have the tools to stand out in the most competitive markets in the world. We're currently working with over 350 recruitment agencies and 5,000 of their consultants right now, helping them to build their personal brands, to consistently win more business, attract talent, and just become that go-to recruiter in the market. Now, we do have a huge coaching program, but a lot of people don't know we also manage the brands of a lot of founders, and we can do the rebrand of that company organizational piece as well. So if your recruitment agency
either needs help to look and sound exactly how you want it to, or your leadership and consultant level need to get out there and drive more traffic back to that website, to the business, and start using LinkedIn to generate more revenue, then you should definitely be reaching out to us. If that sounds of interest, please do visit www.hoxhillmedia.com or drop me, Sean, a personal message on LinkedIn. I love hearing from RAG listeners. I would love to talk to you. Look forward to it. So I'll see you again next week with another episode. Catch you soon.